Good morning, everyone. The Conference Committee for House File 140 will come to order unofficially. We do not have a quorum yet, but we can begin a walkthrough because time is of the essence. Members, this is a proposal that we have spent thousands, I'm going to say thousands of hours on, because this is something that we began more than a year ago to look at following the report by the Office of the Legislative Auditor on the Board of Teaching and the Licensing Division of MDE. So members, you know, we had the study group and those in the audience. We had the study group where we had lots and lots of testimony from a variety of stakeholders, and then we proceeded to begin putting together drafts, even on the DE. This is the third version of the DE, so you know we've been working even over the weekend. My apologies to Christina Pera, our nonpartisan research, who had to work on Mother's Day. I was not happy about that, but I know she's very obliging and came in. And to anyone else in the audience, I'm not sure if Kevin was here or not, but to Mr. Baer, if you were, or if you were in contact with us, you know, it's one thing to bring in your partisan staff, but when you have to call on nonpartisan on a special day when you're a young mother, it is not something that I approve of. But we do our work around here, and that's why I mentioned that we've spent a lot of hours on this proposal, and we think we've reached some good compromises. We spent the weekend communicating with the commissioner. She is here today, and she will comment on this DE, and she will be the only one who does make a comment. So please know that, those of you in the audience, that she is the only one that I will call on. So with that, members, and since we're unofficial, I think we can begin the walkthrough. And Anne-Marie, I guess you will begin, Ms. Butler, you will begin and walk us through Article 1 and Article 3.
Yes, Madam Chair. Beginning with Article 1, the first section is the technical section changing the name, so that didn't change, and that was something that was adopted, I believe, on the same similar day. And it has definitions at the end on page 2. To see, then if you move to section 2, that's the...
Ms. Butler, I'm going to interrupt you because this meeting will come officially to order. We do have a quorum present, and we are in the process of listening to Ms. Butler walk through Article 1. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Then section 2 is the composition of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. See, we went with 11 members. Then some changes from the side-by-side that you see is that clarifying that the 6 teacher members have at least 5 years of teaching experience, and then that the one of the teacher members is a, let's see, the language is on the next page, teacher from a teacher preparation program. That language is on page 4, line 2. Then I think the remainder of it is as it was, of that section is as it was in one of the bills that came into conference, and noting that the effective date is September 1, 2017. Then the next section, section 3, relates to the meetings and the service of the, executive director of the board. And section 4 is just a technical change with the naming of the board for the Code of Ethics. Section 5 on page 6 is, again, clarifying that it's the Pelsby Board advising members of the profession. Then section 6, another technical change. Section 7 is about the licensing and that the licenses are issued. Teacher licenses are issued by the board, and that the board cannot delegate its authority for licensing decisions. And then a lot of stricken language, which is recodified within the DE. That takes you several pages to page 10. Is the next change, which is just, again, more about the new board providing reports in a section that comes later. That lists all the reports that the board is responsible for. Then Section 9 is on page 12, again a technical change regarding the register of person's license. Section 10 is about the money received by the board and adding the new sections to the that section or subdivision. Section 11 is about the rules that are adopted by the board. And you can see on page 13 the paragraphs of what the board needs to include in their proposed rules, and that the rules need to be within what is adopted by statute or session law. Section 12 is subdivision 10, is permissions. That's technical changes with the new board, as well as some language regarding a candidate that has obtained a career and technical certification can apply for a Tier 1 license, and that the Conference Committee took the language that the board is strongly encourage instead of require approved college and university-based teacher prep programs for alternative pathways. Then Section 13, page 14, is the report section that lists the reports that the board is responsible for. And that goes on for several pages. That last one is on page 18 is an implementation report. Then on Section 14 is language regarding teacher preparation program and the board adopting rules to approve the programs and the requirements for program approval. And some of that is recodifying current law as that was stricken or repealed in other sections. And then Section 15 is on page 21 regarding fraud and gross misdemeanor. I think it's a restatement of law. Then Section 16, district verification of teacher licenses, is a technical change, adding the board. Section 17 is the commissioner's report on the survey of districts, the teacher supply and demand. Yes, and that the commissioner will continue to do that until 2018, and then the new board takes over that report. Section 18, services provided, is in the board administration chapter, and that is striking out language with the Board of Teaching, as is Section 19 is clarifying or changing, technical change, substituting the new board for the Board of Teaching. Section 20 is a transfer of powers that transfers the powers from the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education with respect to licensure and credentialing of teachers to the new board. In addition, there's page 23, paragraph C, is a transfer of the STAR report system. And then Section 21 is the first appointment section, and the with the terms beginning January 1, 2018, and then paragraph B is the first members appointed do not count, or excuse me, the term of the first members appointed don't count towards the term limit if the term expires before 2022. And there's new language on, 23.25 about encouraging the governor to consider eligible candidates that previously served on the Board of Teaching for appointment to the new board. Section 22 is a revised instruction that was in prior bills coming into conference, and as is Section 23, the repealer.
Thank you, Ms. Butler. And do you want to just... tackle Article 3 so long at the same time.
Sure, Madam Chair. Then page 53 is the one section of Article 3, and that is a rulemaking section that was adopted, I believe, on the same and similar day by the Conference Committee.
Thank you, Ms. Butler.
Yes,
Kara, Article 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Article 2 deals with the licenses. The first section is on validity of licenses. And it provides that licenses in effect on January 1st, 2018 will remain valid for an additional year after the date on the license. Section 2, authority to license. This was language during the House version, mostly unchanged except on page 25, line 13, there's new language requiring the Pelsby Board and the Department of Education to enter into a data sharing agreement to share data in the STAR system. Section 3, on support and support personnel qualifications, that requires the board to issue licenses and credentials to support personnel, and the remainder of the language in that section is language regarding one-year license is eliminated and other language is recoded in other sections. Section 4, reading specialist, simply changes the name of the board. Section 5, permission to substitute teach. There's new language on paragraph, well, this was in the Senate bill, I'm sorry, paragraph B on line 2731, adding long-call substitute teaching license. There's also new language in paragraph A, allowing the board to allow a person who qualifies for a Tier 1 license to work as a short-call substitute teacher. And that the reference there, 122A-181 subdivision 2, is to the educational or professional credentials that the candidate must have, and we'll get to those in a minute. Section 6, temporary military license, substitutes the board name and requires the board to provide a candidate certain information. Section 7, background checks. Substitutes the board name and also substitutes, adds in the BOSA name where the Commissioner of Education had some duties there before. Section 8 is licensure via portfolio. This is recoding language from Section 122A09, Subdivision 8, substituting the board name and requiring rules. Section 9 is the Tier 1 license. Subdivisions 1 and 2 have been modified since the 6th engrossment of the House file. Subdivision 1 now contains application requirements. It establishes requirements for the district or charter school that is requesting the Tier 1 license, including requiring the charter school or the district to post a position for show that it's unable to hire an acceptable teacher with a Tier 2, 3, or 4 license. Subdivision 2 is the professional requirements. Generally, a candidate with a Tier 1 license has to have a bachelor's to teach a class or a course that is not within the career technical education or career pathways course of study. So if a candidate with that intent that will be teaching a career technical education course or career pathways course study can have an associate's degree, a professional certification, or 5 years of relevant work experience. And that difference in those requirements, those professional educational requirements, you'll see those will be repeated in the other tiers. Subdivision 3 is the term of license and renewal. There's new language regarding the renewal requirements for a Tier 1 license. The district or charter school that requests the renewal must again demonstrate that it was unable to hire an acceptable teacher with a Tier 2, 3, or 4 license for the position. And the teacher must take a content examination and submit the results of the examination to the employing district or charter school within 1 year of the board approving the request for the initial Tier 1 license. And that does not apply to CTE teachers. Subdivision 4 sets a timeline for applying for a school district or charter school applying for the Tier 1 license and the board accepting or denying it. Subdivision 5 is limitations on the license. The license is limited to the content matter that was on the application and to the school district or charter school that requested it. A teacher with a Tier 1 license is not a teacher under the tenure statutes, and it does not bring an individual within the definition of teacher for purposes of PELRA, the Public Employment Labor Relations Act. Subdivision 6 has new language requiring a teacher in a tier with a Tier 1 license to participate in the district or charter school's mentorship program and an evaluation aligned to the extent practicable with evaluation in sections 120-240 or 122-41. Section 10 is Tier 2 license. Subdivision 1 is the requirements for the issuance of the license. It includes professional requirements in paragraph B, again requiring a candidate to have a bachelor's degree to teach a class that's not a CTE class. A course that's not a CTE course, and allowing a candidate to obtain a Tier 2 license to teach a CTE course. The candidate has an associate's, a professional certification, or 5 years of relevant work experience. Subdivision 2 lists the course requirements that may be used to obtain a Tier 2 license. Subdivision 3 is term of license. The Tier 2 license is good for a term of 2 years, and it may be renewed 3 times. The board must issue rules with requirements for additional renewals. Subdivision 4 sets forth timelines for application and approval or denial of the application. Subdivision 5 has limitations on the Tier 1. And like the Tier 1 license, it's limited to the content matter and district or charter school on the application, and it does not bring an individual within definition of teacher under the tenure statutes. Subdivision 6, application towards the probationary period. The time that a teacher with a Tier 2 license works under that license can be used as a credit towards the 3-year probationary period. After that teacher obtains the 3-year license, provided that the total 3 years that are required still have to be consecutive, and it's up to 2 years of the time that the teacher worked for the Tier 2 license, not all of it if it's more than 2 years. Subdivision 7, mentorship and evaluation, requires a teacher with a Tier 2 license to participate in mentorship and evaluation programs. Section 11, Tier 3 license. Subdivision 1 sets forth the requirements, and again, the requirements relating, drawing the distinction between a teacher that teaches content course classes versus CTE classes. The bachelor is required if it's not a CTE course. Subdivision 2 sets forth course requirements. Subdivision 3 provides the term of a license. It's a 3-year license, and it can be renewed every 3 years without limitation. And Subdivision 4 requires a Tier 3 teacher to participate in mentorship and evaluation program. Section 12, Tier 4 license. Subdivision 1 sets forth the requirements for Tier 4 license. It's a teacher that meets the requirements for Tier 3 and has a Tier 3 license and meets some additional requirements. Subdivision 2 is the term that's a 5-year term that may be renewed without limitation. And Subdivision 3 requires a Tier 4 teacher to participate in mentorship and evaluation programs. Section 13, teacher licensure assessment. This is where all the assessment provisions were recodified. Subdivision 1, it states here which teachers need to take the skills exams, and that's Tier 4 teachers. Paragraph B requires Tier 3 and 4 teachers to pass the pedagogy and content exams. Paragraph C requires Tier 3 and 4 teachers of elementary students to pass student reading instruction assessments. And paragraph D, certain language was recodified here, exempting non-native English speakers from the skills exams if they'll be teaching in their native language or world language instruction. Subdivision 2 requires the board to establish passing scores, and Subdivision 3 requires testing accommodations. Subdivision 4 requires remedial assistance for candidates that have not passed the exams. Section 14, this recodifies the expiration and renewal provisions. And this is all other than substituting the license names, Tier 3 or 4, where it previously said professional licenses or referred to the term of the license in the current statute. The new language from the last version, from the sixth engrossment of House File 140, is Subdivision 2, which requires the board to receive recommendations from local committees. Section 15, Licensure Denial and Appeal. This language was mostly in the side-by-side. It accepts the Senate language requiring that the application, that the board inform a candidate within 30 days of receiving the completed application. There is new language that states that a completed application must include supporting information on the background check or the board's conduct determination. Section 16 is on the bilingual and ESL teachers require, it mostly substitutes the board name and makes some clarifications and requires these teachers to meet other requirements for the teaching license and the tiered license system. Section 17 on suspension or revocation, that simply substitutes the board name. There is a new paragraph in Subdivision 2 on page 43 requiring the board to report to law enforcement when a revocation, suspension, or agreement or loss of license relates to the teacher's inappropriate sexual contact with a minor. Section 18 on teacher licensure agreements joining states substitutes the board name. Section 19, this is a new section of law, alternative teacher preparation providers and programs. This was in the Senate version, and the current statute, which is 122A245 on alternative teacher programs, teacher preparation programs, is repealed. And this section now contains all of those provisions. The House file and the Senate file, the substance was similar. So this is the Senate language on that. Section 20, these are exceptions for community ed teachers, and that substitutes the board name. Section 21, on teachers of deaf and hard of hearing students, simply substitutes the board name. Same is true in Section 22. And then going on to Section 23, there's a headnote change adding career and so an exemption for career and technical education instructors. There's language on paragraph B that this section was scheduled to expire in 2020, so there's new language saying that once it expires, these teachers will use the tiered licensure system. Section 24 strikes language relating to variances. Section 25 substitutes the board name where it previously referred to the Board of Teaching or the Commissioner of Education. There's a board name substitution in Sections 26 and 27, which relate to American Indian licenses. Section 28 substitutes the board name, and this relates to the academies, the deaf and blind academies, and adds language just relating to BOSA. Section 29, this relates to the teacher shortage, teacher loan forgiveness, and it makes a name substitution definition of teacher. Section 30 is session law, and it requires this was in the Senate version, and it requires the board to review special education licenses. Section 31 requires the Board of Teaching to amend the current rules relating to the academic and behavioral strategist license. Section 32, this provides how current licenses issued by the Board of Teaching will be treated under the new tiered license system. So a one-year license will be treated as a Tier 1, a two-year license is Tier 2, and a five-year license will be treated as a Tier 4 license. Section 33 allows the board to grant an extension of up to 1 year of permissions, waivers, variances, or temporary limited licenses in effect on January 1st, 2018. Section 34, this is a new section. It's also session law, and it provides that teachers of English as a second language that currently provide content instruction under a provision of No Child Left Behind can continue to do so through the 18-19 school year, and after that they can use the tiered licensure system. Section 35 is their appealer section. The only thing you hear from the House version is that it also includes 122A245, which was in the Senate version, that repealer, since the alternative teacher prep program. There's a new section of law codifying those.
Thank you, Ms. Farah. And thank you again for all of your work over the weekend. Members, with that, I will officially move the H0140DE3 amendment. Delete all to be before us, and at this time would entertain a discussion on Article 1 from members.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pratt.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Pratt offers the SCH 0140A3 amendment. And I guess it's being handed out right now. Begin your discussion or your explanation of it, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, all this amendment really does is allow the board of this new Pelsby board to meet beginning October 2nd and begin the process of organizing and doing a search for an executive director. It won't be officially in place until January 1, but understanding that we do in fact need to begin the search for an executive director so that on January 1 that person's in place and we're ready to begin moving through the rest of the bill. That is the amendment.
Discussion from members. Senator Canton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Forgive me because I'm playing catch up, obviously, having digested a lot of this over the past, 12 hours. Do we need to approve the appointees under the delete all?
Senator Kent, yes. I believe that Ms. Butler mentioned that that the new Pelsby board will hire it and approve the executive director.
So, Madam Chair, how will this work? Will we end up meeting? How are we going to approve them if they're not?
Senator Kent, I suggest you have Representative Pratt answer your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kent, again, the Senate will always have confirmation rights to it, but we also know that these boards often tend to work in lieu of confirmation for quite a period of time. I think the point here being that we've allowed the board to appoint the executive director, and rather than beginning that process on January 1, beginning that process in October so that that person can be in that position beginning January 1 when the board officially organizes.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to hear how we were seeing this.
Further discussion? Well, Senator Pratt, as you know, I've had some issues with this because this is a mandate that you're making on a board that's not official yet, and I think we're setting a precedent. I think I'm quite sure we're setting a precedent. So I have some real concerns about this, and so I wish you would expound a little bit more on why you think this is something we should place in session law, or Ms. Pierre, are we placing this in statute? Ms. Pierre?
Madam Chair, members, no, this would be in session law.
Thank you. Yes, even in session law, this will be available for, you know, all to see. And in the future, I'm wondering if other boards that might be appointed or you know, in law become the next board but aren't official yet till a later date, how this is going to play out. Would you expand on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think there's a couple of reasons for doing this. First of all, is just the need for this board to have an executive director in place on the very first day that it becomes official. Too often these searches will take a number of weeks or months, which will only hamper the board's ability to get moving on the very aggressive agenda that we have in this bill to begin implementing a tiered licensure system. I think second, it's fairly unusual for us to replace one board with another that's been operating as this one has for as many years. I would agree with you in when we create a brand new board for a new purpose that this wouldn't be something we should consider. But the fact that we're transitioning from one to another and one ceases and the existing board ceases to exist on January 1, we have to be ready. I believe it's incumbent on the legislature to make sure this board is ready to begin its work in full and in earnest on the day that it becomes the official replacement.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Would counsel weigh in with any knowledge that you have of this precedent we'd be setting? Ms. Pierre?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of any precedent for something like this.
And Ms. Pierre, any ramifications if we were to adopt this?
Madam Chair, members, I think there might be concerns about the open meeting law, about the board being subject to the open meeting law, and also about it being able to take any official action with respect to rules or any personnel decisions before the board was actually in office.
Thank you, Ms. Pierre. Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair, or whoever would answer this, how do other boards operate in a similar situation where they don't have a leader yet? Are there other boards that have been in this situation that have chosen their director?
I'm going to turn to Senate Council. If Senate Council has any response to that. Sorry, Ms. Butler.
Yeah, I'm not sure of Representative Bennett's question. I was trying to respond to.
Madam Chair, I'll try to ask that again. I don't even know if I'm asking it correctly, but I'm just wondering how current boards, if we didn't enact this, what would happen, and what are current boards, or have they done in a similar situation without being able to choose their director ahead of time like this?
Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair and members, I'm not sure, because I don't know how often we end one board to start another doing somewhat similar work. However, I think the point of this is that they're not beginning their official functions. They're trying to ramp up to get ready to begin their official functions. So
that the language there beginning the selection process for the executive director is not saying that the executive director starts October 2, that the executive director doesn't have authority until January 1, 2018. So I don't know if that helps your answering your question.
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, how about if there's a, I know we haven't transitioned boards like this before where we're actually, but how about a brand new board that's been initiated? How do those start, or how have those started in the past when we've started something brand new? Are they given this lead up, this ramp up time, or do they just start on the date and choose their executive director?
Ms. Butler. Madam Chair and Representative Bennett, I can only recall one in my career within the education area, and that was BOSA that began. My recollection, it was sort of carved out of another board, but I think they just had to start on day one of their the beginning of the board. And but in my recollection as well, I don't know if they had quite the task ahead of them that this Pelsby has in creating a whole new teacher licensure structure as well as issuing those licenses, that wasn't part of the responsibility of that new board at the time.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say that I support this amendment, the A3 amendment, even though I think it's a necessary Band-Aid on a situation that I don't think is optimal. We've had a lot of testimony talking about the problems inherent with doing this wholesale turnover of this board, that it's not necessarily necessary when you consider that, you know, the legislative auditor's report didn't find problems with the board members themselves. It was more structural. But we are making this choice to follow this course of action to make this wholesale change. We are trying to stand this up quickly because we know we're trying to meet a need in our state that needs to be met. We're trying to do a lot of things very quickly. We are going to have a change in executive director sooner than that, no matter what. And that apparently that position is being posted imminently. This is a challenging way to do this. We've put a lot of, set some pretty high bars. There is an inherent cyclical, seasonal nature to the work that this board does. We're going to have new people coming on who are learning how to do it. And there are a lot of barriers that we're going to deal with here. I think allowing this body a little bit of time to function is really important given all the other constraints we have created in this process and system.
Thank you, Senator Kent. Senator Pratt, in regard to the process for developing the rules, that's what's been problematic for me, and also the selection process for an executive director. So would you comment on both of those items in this amendment starting on line 1.9 through 1.12?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Originally, this amendment was intended just to begin the selection process for the executive director. So, Madam Chair, I would suggest that we strike on 1.9, beginning at must to the end of the line, strike all of line 1.10, and strike the beginning of 1.11 to begin at must. So, Madam Chair, the new amendment would read, between October 2nd and January 1 of 2018, the board members must begin the selection process for an executive director under Minnesota statutes. And we would take the rulemaking out of it. Madam Chair, I agree with Ms. Parra that I think it's unusual for the board to begin rulemaking at that point in time. This is really for this board to organize to a point that it can begin its business on January 1.
So, Senator Pratt, I believe we'd accept that as a friendly amendment from the author of the amendment. So I'm going to accept that as a friendly amendment. How about in the last sentence, though, must begin the selection process? How about discussing the selection process or something that is not suggesting that there's an authority in place already that they really don't have? So why do you believe that they must begin the selection process? Will you comment on that further?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. beginning the selection process is simply going through advertising it, doing the interviews, deciding on who you want. This board wants to be its executive director. It can't appoint its executive director or do any official business until it organizes on January 1.
And also, Senator Pratt, thank you for that explanation. I still have a little problem with that language. But don't you also want to insert the open meeting law, that they're subject to the open meeting law as a closing sentence? I believe you had that in one of your earlier versions.
One moment, madam.
Ms. Perry, while they're discussing, is this subject to the open meeting law from your perspective as counsel?
Madam Chair, all public bodies are subject to the open meeting law. The fact that they're not official might create some ambiguity there.
So we perhaps don't need the language, Ms. Perry.
Madam Chair, if the intent is for them to be subject to the open meeting law, that should be in there. If it's not in there, I'm not sure what the effect would be, whether or not they would be subject.
Senator Pratt, comment on that?
Well, thank you, Madam President. It was always the assumption that as Ms. Perry said, all of the work by the board would be subject to open meeting law. If it takes a little bit of clarification to get this over the line, I'm open to that. But also understanding that some of these conversations will have to be outside of the scope of the public in order to protect applicants' privacy. They may be looking at resumes. I know that we would go when we were in the school board looking for a superintendent. We would have, we would talk about candidates or vet candidates until we got the final version to make public, but not every candidate was subject to public scrutiny. And so I think that's the assumption we're working under here, is that everything would be under the current open meeting law statute.
So, Senator Pratt, I would recommend that when this is prepared, eventually as a conference committee report, that the open meeting sentence be included. Commissioner Casellas, would you come forward and comment on this amendment, please? Just to this amendment, please say your name for the record and begin.
Brenda Casellas, Commissioner of Education. I find the amendment problematic simply because I think that overall in the bill, we're moving way too fast. I think that this is an admission that this timeline is not doable. I think we need work on the board members. I think we need work on how we're going to transition appropriately. Currently, the MDE licensing director is going to now be a superintendent on July 1. We're losing the current director of the Board of Teaching, and we would be throwing out the entire board and reconstituting it by January 1. I do think we get into legal problems with open laws, although I'm not a lawyer, but I think the Senator Pratt points it out where you'd be looking at resumes. You'd need to be in executive session for those kinds of things, and so I think that there are a number of problems here with having one board functioning and another board kind of semi-functioning. And I think that could be problematic. I understand the intent so that you don't get behind. I think that could be resolved very easily if we retained at least three members on the board and the current executive director until January 1.
Thank you, Commissioner. So, Senator Pratt, what if we do permissive, may informally organize? Then we have permissive language. And if the board would discuss the selection process, I think we'd be legally very safe to do that and then provide for the open meeting. what's your response to that? I'm sorry, members, that we're having this discussion here, but this is what you do in meetings. Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm fine with changing must to may and formally meet.
Okay, that's a friendly amendment. Thank you. How about the open meeting? Do you want that included?
We'll have Ms. Butler send Ms. Parr some language to add the open meeting clarification.
And how about on must begin the selection process? How about the board may discuss?
Madam President, or Madam Chair, I would prefer to leave must. I think that there's a specific reason that we're permitting this board to convene, and if it's going to convene, this is what it must discuss.
Okay, understood. Is there any further discussion of the Senator Pratt amendment? Senator Kent, you're okay? Good. And this amendment will then be taken care of by council as far as language, and then we'll read that on line 1.6 must becomes may. Senator Pratt has already deleted lines beginning on 1.9 through the period beginning in line 1.11, and we have discussed the insertion of the open meeting law. All those in favor?
Madam Chair?
Ms. Butler, thank you.
The amendment you have before you was drafted to the side-by-side, and if I could just give the proper insertion point before you adopt the amendment. So I'll delete lines 1.3 and 1.4 and insert page 23 after line 30, insert. And then on 1.5, I would delete the paren B, close paren, and put a C for paragraph C.
Thank you, Ms. Butler. Those suggestions are adopted by executive authority here as the chair. So further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the Pratt Amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Article 1. Senator Kent.
Madam Chair, I would like to offer an amendment that addresses the points that Commissioner Castellius brought up. I know this is, I don't have it drafted yet, but I would like to, the 2 points about holding over 3 members.
Senator Kent.
And keeping the executive director as was described. I would like to offer that as an amendment.
You know, Senator Kent, we need to see this in writing.
And so that's what I would like to make sure we don't move too far forward. I'm not exactly sure what the process is that we're going to be following here, and so I don't know if we're going to close up this article at some point. I want to make sure we have time to consider this amendment.
Well, Senator Kent, I'm going to tell you right up front that I would oppose such an amendment on the grounds that if we hold over 3 board members, we're not creating a clean slate. And I think the reason we're creating this new board as one unit, as was recommended in the legislative study group, is that we do need to start over. We need the professional licensing and standards board, professional educators licensing and standards board, to begin anew. There's been a lawsuit, an injunction by the court against this present board, and then on Friday they denied something that the administrative law judge had recommended, and that was the licensure of a candidate from Iowa who had gone through the process. So I have very strong feelings that we need a fresh start, and that with our recommendation that we have in encouraging the governor to look at those who have served previously, that we are going to be in very good shape. And now with the adoption of this transition language, Senator Kent.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would still like to offer this as an amendment.
Of course you can, but you have it written out.
It is, if I can ask counsel to draft that so that we can have that adopted, offered. So we can hold the discussion to that point if we need to.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you. If Senator Kent would yield for a question. Senator Kent, where do you see that the executive director would not be in place until the new board began its operations on January 1?
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, perhaps Commissioner Castelius would expand further on her point that she made in her testimony?
I don't think so.
No.
I think we'll just hold. We've had this discussion many times.
Further discussion? Madam Chair, I would say I think it is, now that we are, there's been a lot that's been sort of floating around. There have been significant differences between the two bills. This is the first time we're seeing it all in one cohesive form. I think it is important to look at these individual elements in the context of the whole package as we're pulling this together. So I think it is appropriate to have additional testimony and feedback as we work through this step and this stage.
Well, then the testimony we'll take right now is on Article 1 from the Commissioner, on Article 1 in its entirety. And this will be all we hear from the Commissioner on Article 1. So she can address those different points. Senator Kent, we have worked long and hard on trying to reach compromises that we think are a really good policy, and we believe that good policy is not to continue any of the membership that's presently a part of the Board of Teaching. We want a clean sweep, and I think that was clear in the study group that there were issues. So welcome again, Commissioner Castelius. Say your name again for the record and begin.
Brenda Castelius, Commissioner of Education. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have an opportunity to speak to the whole bill and the tiered licensure parts later, right?
Yes, but this
just Article 1.
This is Article 1.
Okay. So with the board, I was going to offer up that if we retain three members, maybe those three members then could only have 1 year term, so that then it is reconstituted. You will be essentially reconstituting the board within a year. I just think that might be another way to have continuity and transition. They have the time that Senator Pratt wants to hire the executive director and move forward. So I think that would be really wise in the timeline here, because I am very much concerned about everybody being brand new. This is a time when we're going to be licensing a lot of teachers. Everybody's going to be learning a new system. We'll have new IT systems that are going to be built. They could potentially be, there could be other movements within the agency, given everybody's going through some transition, and I'm just very concerned about that timeline. So maybe that would be a compromise with Senator Kent's amendment.
Well, Commissioner, thank you for those comments. Doing our business here at the table is a little difficult. I may want to call a recess shortly so that we can get these suggestions or amendments prepared so that they are professionally done and accurate. But members, further discussion? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, you mentioned earlier about the executive director and the rationale here was that the executive director would continue in that spot and the board would continue in their role until the new board became effective in January. Where do you see that there's a concern that the executive director would not continue as appointed by this current board until January 1?
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, we know that executive director is actually going to be a new executive director, and they'll be learning on the job as everyone else is. I just think that this is critical in terms of the whole group working together, that there be continuity of who hires that new executive director and how that moves forward.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner Castelius, you and I had the same discussion last week. There's no prohibition on the current executive director from seeking that role. The new Pelsby board could decide that, as it sounds like, it sounds like Ms. Stone is going to pursue another opportunity, that this current board is going to be hiring somebody. The new board may continue to reappoint that person in the role for continuity. I'm still not seeing where there's an issue with any sort of expectation that whoever's in that role on July 1 wouldn't continue in that role until January 1.
Commissioner, any comment to that?
Madam Chair?
Senator,
say what it would be.
if I may address that question, part of the challenge is that we know that the current executive director will be leaving, and so the question becomes, what are we going to do for the rest of this year, knowing that we're not going to have a new one coming on until the following year? We can't effectively hire somebody on that kind of an interim basis and expect they're going to take that job with the likelihood that there's going to be a search coming up in another 6 months. So, again, we're having some really great theoretical conversations about why we think these are good ideas, and I don't disagree in principle, but we have some real-world ramifications to the decisions that we're making that are just, I think, going to make them be sort of practically inoperable.
Further discussion for members? Well, members, we're going to lay this Article 1 to the side. We'll go into recess shortly and have a discussion then return at a time that the chair sets. So let's go on to Article 2. Members, I'll put Article 2 before us for discussion. Comments on Article 2. I'm sure there are members who have questions. So no concerns about Article 2. Okay. Commissioner, will you come forward and comment on Article 2?
Madam Chair, Brenda Caselli is Commissioner of Education here again. As you know from our discussions, this is probably the part of the bill that I have the most concerns about that I think we still need to work through. And the Board of Teaching has the bigger issue with the membership and the timeline, and I wanted to represent that accurately. But I wanted to first just thank you, like you said. You've spent a lot of time on this bill, and you have been a good listener, and I appreciate that, as well as Senator Pratt. And you've also worked with stakeholders, listening to them about their urgent needs. And I really, really can't thank you and the members enough for the amount of work that you've put into this. But I do think it's critical that we address not only the urgent need for having high-quality teachers in our classroom, but that we balance that with the real need that we have to close achievement gaps, and that this system that we are creating is going to be a system that we have for a long time, and getting it right is more important than getting it done. So having said that, I cannot recommend to the governor right now the way that this article reads or the bill in its entirety that he sign it. It still needs work. I strongly believe that we must protect our highest poverty schools, and I had a discussion with Senator Pratt about this yesterday, our most diverse schools, because they are the ones that year after year are hard to staff and experience disproportionately high teacher mobility. We also must retain the professional status of being a teacher. We should not just put a warm body in front of our students. Teaching is a craft. It requires a deep knowledge of our K-12 standards, our assessment systems that are aligned to those standards, pedagogical knowledge, child development, behavior management, and building deep and lasting relationships with children and their families. It's not an easy job. We aren't losing teachers because of a relicensure system. I just want you to know that. We're losing teachers because for almost two decades, we've blamed and shamed them for just about everything. We've woefully underpaid them, and there's a competitive workforce now that is taking up our teachers, therefore making it much harder to retain our teachers. And with this system that's in this bill right now, anyone can become a teacher without having any professional prep program in their credentialing. That's my number one concern, retaining the professionalism of the teacher. I want to specifically mention a couple things, and I hope we can recess so that we can continue to work through this bill and secure the governor's signature on this bill. But the one pieces that we that I'm most concerned about is tier one is the unlimited license outside of the content area. We compromised on CTE teachers having the unlimited provisions. You accepted the information, the language about content and pedagogy on renewal. However, continuing to allow for unlimited for classroom teachers in elementary and secondary is unacceptable. Tier 2 looks okay. Tier 3 does not require professional preparation programming. I strongly, strongly, strongly suggest that Tier 1 and Tier 2, we can deal with our supply problem with Tier 1 and Tier 2, but they ought to be progressing to a professional license and become a professional teacher for the reasons I described earlier, which is all of the things that are involved in being a great teacher and the quality that we need for our teachers in our hard-to-staff schools. Tier 4 requires that you have held a Tier 3 license. I believe we agreed that anyone who was having a Tier 5 continuing license now would get a Tier 4, but there's a little loophole in there that we have to fix that says that you have to have held a Tier 3 license. So that needs to be fixed so that they can be grandfathered in. It also doesn't address, and I mentioned this with Senator Prada over the weekend, principals and superintendents or other professional teachers who may be teaching at the department or in another capacity who maybe haven't had a professional teacher evaluation within the last 5 years. So that needs to be addressed. And then just finally, I want to speak about cultural competence. These teachers are least qualified teachers. I know because we've looked at the data when we did our teacher equity report for the federal government. Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers will disproportionately be in our charter schools, which serve disproportionately high numbers of high poverty, high minority kids, and in our hard-to-staff urban core schools that have high teacher turnover that are also high poverty and high minority. The data shows it, and so we have to protect these kids and these teachers, and we have to protect the profession that we love, Madam Chair, the profession that you and I have both served in for nearly 30 years, you probably a few years more than me, and that we keep the word profession in professional teacher. Those are my biggest comments. There are a few other smaller technical things that I'd like for us to address, but those are the structural problems that right now would cause me to ask the governor not to support this in its current condition.
Thank you, Commissioner. You know, we have committee members, because not all of you have been involved in all of this work that we've been doing every hour for the last several months, but we have listened to the Commissioner very carefully. And, you know, in Tier 1, we made the renewals contingent on posting to seek a higher qualified candidate. And we did this in addition to the compromise already agreed to in requiring candidates to take a content exam. Now, none of that has been going on for the last 20 years. And I've, again, reviewed the Board of Teaching Minutes since last July, and I don't find that there's any discussion to a great extent going on about the first-time applicants or even, for that fact, the renewals. So I'm not sure that we're being fair to our school boards with whom we have entrusted over the last 20 years to find candidates for positions for which they cannot find a candidate, and I'm convinced that they're always looking for the best qualified candidate. School boards do not go looking for substandard candidates for their children, for our students. They do not do that. The Senate provision that has unlimited renewals, Commissioner, remember, passed the Senate with bipartisan support. In regard to your cultural competency, that is a school board decision. That is a district decision, and we have placed it where we believe it should be through the training and through the renewal process. And so we believe that that's going to happen in districts where that need should occur. In, let's see, I think maybe
Chair 1 is your biggest issue, and then the board. So I know time is flying, and we have 11 o'clock sessions. So members, please know that we have in our discussion the H0140DE3 amendment. We're not moving for adoption of the articles yet. We're going to go into a recess, and I will want council and partisan staff and the chairs and our CAs to meet in 454 promptly. This meeting stands in recess. Our meeting will reconvene, please. Thank you for being patient with us. We can add that to our thousands of hours. I'm not going to forget this. I will die with probably something on my gravestone about this. But it's really been fun, entertaining, and thank you, Senator Pratt. I think if the governor does not sign this, he does not understand what it means to compromise and to work through language changes constantly. So please, Governor, do sign this. I'm saying that publicly because we have worked beyond belief on this proposal for a year, Governor, and so I plead with you to consider the good policy that's in here. So, members, I'm going to move the H0140DE3 delete all amendment for adoption and offer, first of all, the A43 amendment, which is clarification of the transition. Is there any discussion? This is basically what we discussed, but now it's in print, so we have it formally. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the A43 amendment is adopted. Senator Kent offers the A41 amendment. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank everybody for a good discussion and willingness to have this conversation. What the A41 amendment would do would say that two members who are currently serving on the Board of Teaching are eligible for appointment, and this would be for 1 year.
Thank you, Senator Kent. Is there discussion? I think even though I was opposed, I can compromise. So thank you, Senator Kent, for bringing it forth and for allowing us to have discussion of it. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the A41 amendment is adopted. Senator Housley offers the A42 amendment. Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the A42 amendment does, it defines what shortage area actually means in Subdivision 6. Page 2, delete Subdivision 6 and insert what shortage area means, Subdivision 1 and 2 there. And then also a Tier 1 license must not be renewed more than 3 times unless the requesting district or charter school can show good cause for additional renewals. A Tier 1 license issued to a teacher in a shortage area as defined may be renewed without limitation.
Thank you very much. Senator Housley, is there discussion? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've had a lot of discussion over Tier 1, and I know the commissioner talked about putting a warm body in front of the classroom, and that's never been the goal here. The goal is to meet the needs of students. And so, you know, as we talked about Tier 1 and the controls that we had in place, we already had that their appointment was up annually, that they had to, basically they had no job security. They were at the will of the school board and the administration. If they weren't doing a good job, they could be released without any hesitation. Their job was posted annually, and that someone, that is a local school district, had to hire a higher tier licensed teacher if one became available and was acceptable. The goal there was to make sure that we didn't take a Tier 2 or Tier 3 teacher that had been released for non-renewal only and not allowed continuing contract rights to then come in and say, well, I'm a Tier 2 teacher. You have to hire me now for this Tier 1 slot when we've already proven that they're not effective in the classroom. We then took the commissioner's request to add a content test for upon renewal for this, the secondary teachers, and we put a stronger language in place for the Pelsby Board to review and deny these applications, where in the Senate bill, at least, they were based, you know, Pelsby Board had the issue based on the, just on the recommendation of the school board. And so now we're adding in the teacher shortage piece. I think it's a good compromise along with, along with the other pieces that we've discussed. And members, I recommend that we adopt it. I just want to make very clear for the record, there are a number of controls here. The goal has always been, that a Tier 1 teacher would move to a Tier 2 or a Tier 3 license at some point in time. That we don't want an unlimited, we really don't want these teachers in the classroom for an unextended period of time, but we also trust our local school boards to put a qualified teacher in. I know when I was on the board, if I heard from a parent by email, I called the superintendent. I talked to the superintendent next time I saw her. If someone called me, I'd talk to her the next day. If I got more than one request or one complaint, I was on the phone with her that night. I have never, ever met a school board member, a superintendent, a principal that hasn't wanted a qualified teacher leading that classroom. I have never met a principal or a superintendent or administrator that hasn't spent hours talking about making sure that we're evaluating these candidates and giving them critical feedback to make their jobs better. And I think this is one piece that in the compromise, it probably makes it a little stronger, but I felt it was pretty strong to begin with. There, I've done with my soapbox, and I hope I entertained you again.
Very good, Senator Pratt. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A42 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the A42 is adopted. So, members and audience, we're waiting for an additional amendment that is being prepared. I think, I'm going to give my speech now. Mr. C. So during this holding pattern, most of you know that this pursuit of reform began a year ago, and that one of the goals of the study group was to clean up the statutes. That was very important to us, that we not have confusion in our statutes so that when newcomers or present teachers or others reading our language could follow it. It would be clear, it would be concise, it would be simple to the extent that we can make statutes simple. It would have all the qualities of good writing. And with that, that was the direction that we gave counsel, in particular Ms. Pera, because we charged her with preparing this. So she reorganized and we changed language little by little with help from our counsel as well as our partisan staff. And I think what we accomplished here is very readable, very understandable, and very encouraging to those who are seeking licensure from out of state or who are presently licensed in Minnesota, who will have a clear definition now of the four tiers. I also want to state at this time, and I'll restate it in my motion, that there are technical changes, Ms. Pera and Senate Counsel, that need to be made, and in particular you, Ms. Pera, because we have charged you with doing this. Keep in mind that the commissioner will speak to you. She has a concern about evaluation in regard to principals who want to retain their teacher licenses. And on page 52, following line 21, Ms. Pera and others, we may need some clarification that any license that expires before the effective date is, you know, is still in effect. So just make sure that there's no confusion there for those who may have let their license lapse, for example, or, you know, in this little transition time period. So make sure that any license that expired before the effective date is still recognized as effective. And there will be other technical changes, too. Other comments from members? I don't think I want to belabor this because I could go through all of the discussions we had with the commissioner, but I think in reading the language, you know that we have listened. We have compromised. I think we've met some really good compromises. You know, our personal feelings, I have to set mine aside, Senator Pratt, because I know I always give you such a bad time. but we're really good friends, but believe me, we've had some go-arounds, but that's made this more interesting for me, certainly. Want to thank those in the audience who serve on the Board of Teaching presently. I know Aaron Doan's in the audience, so is Nels Onsted. Thank you for your service. You'll be moving on. I served on the Board of Teaching, as you know, in the 90s. In fact, I served right as the community expert was being enacted under former Governor Arnie Carlson. So at that time, he foresaw, at least, as did the board, a need to rely on four emergency uses. It was considered then for a community expert. And from my reading of these minutes, and I have them all here from the Board of Teaching from July on, I can see that we have a very robust need, I would say, for a Tier 1, and I think we have amended it just fine. So with that said, and reminding Council again that the technical changes need to be made by you and the reviser, and I will have that in my final motion, but it is very important when we're adopting a delete all and then onto a conference committee report that we know that they've been given direction. So we have our last amendment here.
Madam Chair, we're just checking it to make sure it does exactly what we want it to do. Is it good? Madam Chair, I would like to offer the 844 amendment. If I could get a page. Madam Chair, while the amendment's being handed out, what this amendment does, we've had a number of conversations with the commissioner, and I think it's always been our goal to make sure that, as I mentioned before, we have our professional qualified teachers in the classroom. This would then reinforce that with the Tier 4. To say that a Tier 4 license has to have met the coursework of a state-approved teacher prep program.
Discussion from members.
One moment, madam.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I thought the commissioner was signaling me, but she was signaling somebody else. This was a compromise that we arrived with the commissioner, and we think enhances the status of the Tier 4 license even where it was when we first presented in the DE amendment. And I would open it up for any questions or comments.
Discussion? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pratt, thank you. You know, this has been a robust discussion, and we're all, I think, very committed to trying to strike the proper balance that allows flexibility but also maintains the kind of great teaching standards and quality that we want for our kids.
Further discussion? Okay. I think with discussion ceasing, Senator Pratt renews his motion that the 844 4, amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the 844 is adopted. Further discussion. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we adopt the amendment, I'd like to give, I guess, you know, my little speech
yes.
for a moment. And first off, thank Representative Erickson for her partnership. Not only as we've discussed this bill, but going back to my working on the study group last summer, she's been a wealth of information with her experience as a classroom teacher and as a former board member of the Board of Teaching, and I just can't express how much I appreciate your thoughts and guidance and mentorship through this program. Or through this bill. I want to thank our Senate staff, too. They've done a terrific job throughout the interim. And as you've seen yet today, the last-minute changes that we tend to put them through and the way that they can scramble to get the concepts that we as legislators come up with, not always clearly defined, but put it down on paper so it makes sense when it goes into law. I want to thank Senator Kent for serving on the conference committee and being a good resource to me. I want to thank Senator Housley, Dames, Clausen, Rieger, and former Senator Dahl, working with them throughout the interim on the study group as well as the House participants. I thought it was a good exercise. It was a good exercise for us to go through. It was a good exercise for us to hear from stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope what you see in this final bill is the reflection of the work that the legislative auditor did, the work that the study group did, and the work that those stakeholders brought into the process for us. And so I just want to thank you, Representative Erickson, and everyone involved. And I'm excited to pass this bill and put it on the governor's desk.
Thank you, Senator Pratt, and thank you to you also because you brought a different perspective to this. And thank you, nonpartisan staff and partisan staff. I think when we had our meetings, we had more great discussion on every issue that was arising, whether it was from us or from the commissioner, that anyone could expect. You know, it's almost sad that we couldn't have the public view us because it is really an experience that's so invaluable. And then to have the stakeholders coming to us as they saw these different drafts and gave input. So this is indeed a proposal that I hope certainly goes forward and the governor signs it that I think will have a lasting effect on a reform of the licensure as well as the governing for our teachers and our future teachers and also for those who work in our schools like our paraprofessionals because we've covered probably every perspective of the profession in this bill. So members, with that, I will renew my motion that the H0140DE3 amendment be adopted as amended, and that the revisor be directed to prepare a conference committee report to be delivered to staff and then to us. Is there any discussion? And certainly, Representative Bennett, I wanted to thank you. I didn't publicly thank you, but you've been such a great input here. With that said, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the conference committee report will be prepared by the revisor and delivered for signatures. Is there any other business to come before us? Thank you, everyone. This meeting is adjourned.